Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am co-host Brian, and as always, joining us is our co-host Jim.
Space villainy.
Something.
Yeah.
And,
yes. And we have two guests with us this week, both from Canada, so they'll be extra nice, because that's the reputation you guys have.
Chris, try to hold it up.
They're very sorry to be here.
Chris Adderley and Alex Katamo. And these guys, hi guys, how you doing?
Hi there.
Hey.
And these guys are working on a rarity, even in the space game. I mean, you talk about space games being a niche. This is like a little niche within a niche. And it's a game called Star Villains and Space Heroes, and it's not a fighter sim, it's a cap ship sim.
That's right.
Which you can kind of count those on maybe one hand, maybe two, and still have some fingers left.
I know two others, and one of them's indie.
What's the other one?
I don't remember the indie one's name, actually. It's super old. The other one's Bridge Commander.
Bridge Commander, yes. Let's see if I can remember some of them. There's Bridge Commander. There's Star Shatter.
Oh, there's Independence War.
Independence War. There was two of those. There's Starfleet. There's Starfleet Academy.
Do not forget his
kind of a real-time tactical.
There's Klingon Academy. There's Battlecruiser 3000 AD, Jim. And
I don't know if that counts.
And it's it counts. And there's the two rules of engagement games. So that's about 10 games.
Yeah.
Out of the
history, keep in mind.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, cap ships are not as sleek and fast and glamorous as their fighter-based ilk. So yeah, not a lot of games cover that. So one, I got to give you props for covering capital ships, because you know they're their own brand of fun.
Yeah,
They're definitely their own kind of enjoyment. Let's start with the history of the project. How did you guys get on this? When did it start? How long have you been working on it? Like all that.
We've been working on it for I want to say 2 years, but I feel like it's actually more than that.
It's about 2.5 now. I think last January.
I think I mean, space fighters are cool. Everyone loves space fighters, but the whole capital ship thing is also cool in its own way. And I don't know. I think after like being really avidly into science fiction, there's a certain point when like in big epic space battles and stuff, you're kind of looking around and you're like, yes, I've seen fighters before, but these capital ships, how appealing! And so I think like Chris and I both kind of feel that way to some extent. And yeah, we were just talking about it one day, and I think I had sketches or something on my laptop. We were drunk too, I think, right, Chris?
Yeah. That was kind of the genesis of the project. Really, was at a pub.
Did you start? You start drinking, and then you fall down that deviant art rabbit hole.
Yeah,
you start looking at people's artwork of cap ships and stuff.
And not enough people give alcohol the credit it deserves.
It's wonderful
for being such an impetus.
Catalyst
of creativity. Now, you mentioned Independence War. What cap ship games had you played before this?
Well, I had played Bridge Commander and some Independence War. I don't know, one thing that I had found about a lot of the games that had given capital ships a shot was that they tended to go, I thought, a little bit overboard in the like super realism simulation, too much to keep in your head kind of way of doing things. And I thought, like, obviously a real big space capital ship or even like a Navy capital ship is something that's run by lots of people. There's lots of jobs to do. So it's kind of hard to imagine it just being something that you can fly.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like we'd always, like, friends of mine would play Halo and see like a ship like the Pillar of Autumn and be like, that's really cool. It would be cool if you could like fly that on a mission. because I guess
there was, I think there was even some ambition at one point to make a Halo mod where you could fly the Pillar of Autumn around with Halo CE.
Yeah.
That never really got off the ground.
Okay, I have to ask. I've only played one Halo game, and it was only in multiplayer. So what is this ship you're talking about?
Oh, well, it's got a really big spaceship in it that has a really strong gun on it.
Oh.
And it looks kind of cool to some people.
it's kind of blocky, and you know, you're kind of classic, I guess, in Wing Commander-esque big ship.
Although I think, like, that's just an example that informs a greater example, which is seeing virtually any space capital ship and being like, I could fly that.
So I need you to mod in the Yamato and let me fire the wave motion gun.
Yeah, totally. that ship's playstyle would be one that we have all lined up for a faction. It's like fixed guns that are really powerful facing out just the front of the ship, and you have to maneuver the whole ship to aim things instead of its turrets.
Oh.
Yeah.
So the ship that I've been playing around with in the demo, I think is sort of like a system patrol ship or whatever.
Is it the beta or the demo? Let's be clear,
Jim. The most recent thing. I played the original demo that they released, was it like in March or so? I got that new code that you guys put together for us, and I screwed around with that a little bit today.
And appreciate that, by the way.
Yeah, no totally worries. Appreciate it. No problem. I'm trying to, and of course, you know, I didn't read the manual, because who does that? But
is there a manual?
There's no manual.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The
demo version has a tutorial in it, but... there's no manual.
But the demo felt, I'll be honest, the demo felt quite a bit different than the beta does.
Yeah, well, I think, the demo has parts in it that we implemented as kind of a vertical slice of the whole game. So there are some parts of it that are, that means like a demonstration of a lot of different parts of like one section of a game. And so as we started working on the beta version, we started trying to think about how we could like refine things. And there are a lot of things that are just general improvements. Like in the demo version, you could like yaw any angle you wanted, but you couldn't pitch greater than 90 degrees in either direction. And that's like, it's just fixed now. It works in the beta. You can go wherever you want. And, you know, there's a lot more ships with different play styles and things. So
I noticed, and I don't know if it's the ship that I was flying or it's just the general behavior in the game, but the turrets on the ship will track wherever I put the cursor, and then navigationally the ship will bring the nose around to track.
Yeah.
Can you decouple the navigation from the aiming?
If you hit WASD while you're in flight, that'll navigate the ship separately from the controls. And there's a button you can enable that'll just lock it that way.
You can just hold F to temporarily decouple it.
Oh, okay.
So if you just wanted to continue on a vector.
Oh. Okay, because I discovered I could WSAD and maneuver the ship, but as soon as I quit giving inputs, then it would say, oh, well, I'm going to track the cursor again. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Now, can you lock a ship and I can just maneuver and worry, you know, like let the AI take care of the targeting? Because it seems to be kind of a manual targeting where I have to lead, you know, and if I lock them, I get sort of an aim pipper that's out in the ship that predicts, you know, position, and I should shoot there. And the guns on the ship that I'm using appear to be like a bolt thrower of some sort, you know, where it's throwing like pellets out at them. So are there beam weapons and such in the game that are more instantaneous?
Yeah, there are.
Okay.
We've got two ships in the version you guys have that have beams on them. And as far as the AI's controlling your weapons, it's actually something we talked about for ships that have secondary weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the way it works is you can like cycle through if you have more than two weapons on your ship. We were talking about maybe having like the AI just shoot whatever the weapon you're not using is if you're using the other two.
Okay.
The problem is since the game has that that element of having an energy bar that fills up and like and then lowers as you fire your weapons, I think there's a lot of contexts where it would actually be pretty annoying to have some like AI gunner just firing continuously and using up all your energy if you're like, I need that energy to like boost away from here, use countermeasures.
So all of your systems draw off the same energy pool then?
Most of them.
Okay. So is there shield management and stuff going on? Because I noticed there are shields on the ship, but I didn't find like a thing where I can say, well, give more power to this system or that system. But
we don't have any shield management right now. What were you going to say, Chris?
I was just going to say that I think the biggest challenge we kind of face in this game is taking the fact that it's a capital ship simulator and I guess bringing it down to what we wanted to have there. Because a lot of such games have really, really extensive power management, right?
Yeah.
And I've always found... I don't know. They're awkward. If you want, my personal opinion, if you want to do that kind of thing, put it in kind of like an RTT type style where you've got, you know, specific command over a ship and you're more concerned with actually managing the ship's actual like power draw. You know, I launch fighters now and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to figure out some kind of way in which we're trying to balance between like, I guess, the simulation and keeping a slight arcade feel.
Right.
Yeah. I think, like, at the end of the day, we could have a whole keyboard full of different functions that would be really hard to learn. But in thinking about something like power usage, we were sort of thinking, like, okay, in a game where you can manage between, like, shield and engine usage, for example, that's, like, you'd probably use that for getting away or getting up to something really quickly, like, throw all your energy into engines, or if you're trying to survive, like, throw them all into shields. And that mechanic is kind of there the way it is, with the ship having a boost function that uses lots of energy. You can get away from something really fast or head towards something really fast by using energy at the expense of, like, weapons fire, for example, just sort of by using it rather than having to adjust a slider or something.
Okay, now, are you setting a particular speed and then the ship follows that, or is it kind of a Newtonian thing? Because I notice, like, if I hit the E key, then my retro thrusters come on and I decelerate or go backwards. And if I hit Q, then I'm going forwards. So once I set that and then I start maneuvering the ship, do I continue to drift in the direction that I was last going?
That's right. Yeah, you'll just keep going.
Okay, because that's what it felt like. And I was trying to get my head around, like, what was actually going on there. So remember one of the big things that I really liked about, you mentioned the Independence War games, was whenever you'd get the tactical display on, you could actually see the ribbons behind the ships, and it would show you know, where they've been. And it gives, because space, it's like you've got some terrain out there, and it's really pretty. You know, but it's kind of like you're distant from it. And, you know, well, there was one mission where I was in, and there was a pretty sizable asteroid, and we were kind of circling around that fighting each other. and that was pretty neat. But I noticed whenever you hold the mouse wheel down, it brings up a menu, a radial menu, and then you can pick a tactical mode that kind of, you know, it superimposes some radar icons and stuff on the display. And that was kind of nice. Right. And I was just thinking, you know, that's the one thing that I wish was in that view, is that there was some kind of a flight path history ribbon that was tracked behind the ships too.
Yeah, I think Chris and I discussed something like that for sure. If you notice,
because there's a flight path prediction arrow right now, but there's no flight path history, which is something I never really actually considered. But no,
yeah, I guess it wouldn't be that hard, because the player ship right now shows a little trajectory for where it's headed, and when you go to that radar mode, and probably just be like the opposite for its history, almost like a trail or something, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd figure out how to program it. Probably.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing that I would wish in there is, like, whenever I drop into that mode, if I could actually, like, hold the shift key down or something and get a free cursor, and then I could drop waypoints, right? And then decouple the navigation, and the ship will just play out those waypoints, and I can worry about aiming the guns and stuff.
Interesting.
Oh, this is another cool idea.
Yeah, that would probably work. There's a second function that's the map mode, which it works just like the radar mode, except it's like a top view of the whole battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Totally do something in that one, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That could work.
Definitely want to decouple the map mode from being zoomed on your ship at one point. I guess what I can say is our strategy in terms of making the game, there's only two of us and we're doing it part-time, so it goes slowly at times. So I guess the plan is to release independent elements.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've kind of sectioned off additional, tactical view features until after we get our first kind of like completed beta out to the public. So then it's like, okay, we can get feedback on our system, see how these things are actually working out, whether all of our armchair generaling has actually been correct.
Mm.
Yeah, I think Chris and I have a little bit of an attitude that's like, we're just going to do it, and that's how it's going to be. And then we put it out there and get feedback, and then sometimes we'll see these things that are like, oh, yeah, that is a really good idea.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's kind of neat, it's just a thing I like to expose people to, although the board game is a little bit too much for me to handle, but I keep waiting on somebody to do a computer version of it. And I'm not asking you to do that, but you might want to actually take a look at this guy's product though. But it's called Attack Vector Tactical, and it's made by Ad Astra Games. And it's this board game where he took spaceships and put it in Newtonian physics, but he does it on a hex map. And you can get to the point, like if you burn, they kind of track heat dissipation in the ships, right? So the whole aft of the ship is like this big radiator because they're trying to bleed off this heat so you don't cook the crew, right? But it's kind of neat. But they've got some interesting weapons in there. Like they have a thing that's like sand casters, you know, that actually ejects sand out. And, you know, if you like run into a cloud of sand at like Mach 100, that's pretty ugly. Right?
Yeah.
I remember, it's just a really cool game that's full of a lot of very novel ship systems and ideas.
Yeah, it sounds kind of crazy. I'm trying to imagine how on a board game you would have like your hex grid, and I guess you just keep traveling along whatever like hex direction you're going.
Oh, it's completely bonkers. He's got a downloadable version that takes you through like play it by yourself, right? And it's like how you're supposed to teach yourself to play the game, because I come out at like a Starfleet battles background, you know, and I understand like that on a hex map, BattleTech, Car Wars. Starfleet battles, that kind of thing is my history. So then to see this thing, and I saw it at a con, you know, being played out on the tabletop, and I was like, this is bonkers, because they had there was an old game, it was called Mustangs and Messerschmitts, where you would have airplane models on a base, and the base actually was on wheels, and there was like a dowel rod that came out of it, and you would move the airplane up and down the dowel rod, and I mean, you needed like a high school gymnasium sized floor to play this thing. It was no joke.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a crazy game, but this is kind of like a hex map tabletop version of that with spaceships, and they actually give you there's stackable counters that have different angles, right? So if the ship is at like 35 degrees of port lean and like 20 degrees up, then you combine two stacked tiles that give you that angle, and then you lay a miniature on it. Oh, it's bonkers, dude. Crazy. It's crazy. And then just the navigation thing, you actually plot your navigation, and he's got like a 2D globe, and you plot like which way you're going and that. So it completely tracks like the 3D angle of the ship, and it tracks velocity vectors, which is the whole attack vector tactical thing that he's doing. And it's bonkers is the only way I can describe it. But he managed to do
so
it in a board
track
game.
That sounds a little more detailed than I think what they're trying to... I know.
But I'm just what I'm looking at is some of the ship systems that were in there. Like, you need to shield your ship from lasers. Well, you eject water out into space, and it turns into ice, and now you have an ice shell around your ship.
I love that ship. In fact, we played with that a little bit.
Something like that.
Yeah. I think, it's tough because we spend so much time trying to get all the core features in that we only have a certain amount of time to be developing those kind of things, which are more like balance features, I guess.
Yeah, I'm just trying to feature your game to death, that's all.
It'll never be released now.
Adding shit to it.
No, it's...
But
it's,
I mean, I think I that kind see. Of creation, it's like... I think that it's super fun, and it also, I think it helps add a lot of like flavor to different factions and things. Like in the demo version, there's all the ships have different anti-missile countermeasures, and for the humans, it's kind of like this little wave of, I guess, radio waves that are disrupting the missile or whatever. But then there's like the one of the other factions in the demo has something that works more like chaff. Like when you hit your countermeasures button, there's these little explosions of dots that come out of the ship, and that's what decoys the missiles. Or with the robot faction, instead of when they decoy a missile, instead of it just like going off into space, they like reprogram it so it loops around and like homes in on whoever shot it and stuff like that.
Oh, that's really cool. So are most of the ships, is the setup like there's an above and a below turret, and whatever weapon is in it changes, or do you have ships that have multiple turrets on them?
Yeah, that's like probably the biggest way that the ships have their own kind of variation going on, is like the robot ships tend to have a more singular weapon system that has a lot of blind spots around it, whereas like the human ships will have like more general coverage turrets all over them that fire in like a big hemisphere, so they're not as difficult to use and stuff like that.
So do some of the weapons have like, say, the human ships where the turrets can turn, are they all 360, or are there limits, like the front turrets can track this arc and the side turrets track another arc, so depending on where you manage to put the target, that might be the sweet spot, so you can hit them with two different sets of weapons versus if they were dead in front of you.
Yeah, it has that.
I can tell you it was a programming nightmare, but it works now, so yeah, that's good. No, like, we want to design every ship to be at least slightly unique, whether that's in terms of, like, say, it's got blind spots or it's got different weapons. Like, if you play the beta and check out the human battleship, for example, it's got a pretty good example of what, like, a huge ship with lots of weapon systems will have. I think it's got 4 heavy turrets, 8 or 10 small turrets, as well as missiles and such. So, you know, the bigger the ship, the more weapons you'll have to manage.
And, that battleship definitely has that concept of overlapping fields of fire, where, like, from the front-on view, you get a good amount of your weapons firing, but, like, if you manage to get them into more of a broadside view, you have, like, all the weapons on the side of the ship as well as its main guns able to fire. Or if you're, like, underneath or above something, you can only use your bottom 2 or top 2 main guns.
Okay, I must have done myself a disservice by, like, picking the default small ship then.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing. I played a couple of skirmishes, and I picked, I think it was the Destroyer, one of the few, like, the first ships, and had, like, two weapons on it. And I have to be honest, I was flying around, like, why are there two targeting thingies? Which one do I put my cursor into? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing that we've been trying to, like, find a good solution to, because it's... I think it's kind of boring for the most part if every ship just has one gun and one set of missiles, which is what you kind of have to do to just have one crosser. So for whenever we have a ship that has two guns that you can fire with the left or right click button, what we've got right now is two crosshairs that'll show up in different places depending on how fast the weapon goes. And if you look closely, they actually like change how visible they are based on which one you're using. So if you fire your left click button, the little prediction box corresponding to the left click button will fade away so that you can barely see it, so that you kind of know which one you're focusing on. Uh-huh. But we are trying to figure out ways to make that more clear without having to just be like button one and button two over the little boxes.
Yeah, UI iteration is something that's probably happened the most. Since you guys have played both the demo and the beta, you can probably tell that the whole user interface...
I think
it works tons better in the beta. But it's just iterating, trying to figure out how to show things better, you know, how to convey lots of data really easily.
Yeah,
it's a fun challenge.
Now, the game has three. You've been talking about these factions. Tell us about the different factions. They're on the website, list three, but if someone's not on the website, can you just list them and tell us what the differences are and all that stuff?
Sure. The first faction is the humans. They're a group called EMPOL, which stands for the Earth Milky Way Political Organization. And it's pretty much what you'd expect. They're not particularly evil, but also not outlandishly good. They have like covert operations and stuff. It's sort of meant to feel a lot like modern day NATO or something, but in space. They're kind of on and off at war with this group of alien robots called AAD, which stands for the Artificial Intelligence Administration. And and these guys are kind of funky because they're robots that seem to have like occurred through some way that no one really knows. Like maybe they're like the leftovers of some civilization that had lots of AI or something. And so they're like, they're a little different than normal robots. They might have like emotions and things, and they're sort of sentient. And so it's sort of an interesting variation on the usual robot paradigm, which is like, we are logical and that is all we care about.
Would you say they have a plan?
They have lots of plans.
The writers of that show didn't even have a goddamn plan. All right,
I know that about that show.
God, don't get me started. Okay, and the last, the Solonar.
That's right. There's two more in addition. We haven't updated
those
website.
Those are the ones in the demo.
Yeah. The Solonar is supposed to be like a dystopic version of something like the Federation from Star Trek. It's like an alien federation, except it's more like an empire. Like there seems to be this kind of like voluntary basis by which alien groups join it. But you don't get to retain any kind of like individualism or identity once you're part of it. You just like, you are a Solonar now. Enjoy. Everyone wants to be a Solonar. and they kind of have this like Cold War relationship going on with the humans because the humans don't like that. They're all like, we don't want to be part of that. Thanks. There's another group which is called the Integrated Group. That's their name. And they're these like digital people. Do you guys know what a post-singularity intelligence is?
Do not.
It would be like, it would be someone who uploaded their consciousness into a computer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're little computer people and they fly around these really like technologically advanced ships. And the last one is actually Chris's faction, so why don't I let him tell you about them?
Yeah, my price for learning to program for this was that I get my own fraction, my own faction. So,
nice.
So they're called the Signathians. They are an isolationist people. They live in kind of outside of the galactic community, and they take a view that everybody else's stuff really should be theirs. not kind of in a conquering way, just kind of like, oh, you know, we want that from you. We're just going to warp in and take it. And one thing I like about them is, as I've been designing the faction, all of their ships are highly modular. So basically, their ships are kind of like skeletons, except they have pods which will fit into those skeleton points, And so like a battle cruiser might have, say, 5 or 6 pod slots, whereas a destroyer might only have 1. And so you can get kind of any combination of ship, and they can customize their ships really rapidly to fit mission needs.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Ooh. Now, I like the sound of these factions, and so they all have different, you know, strengths and weaknesses. And is it like a rock, paper, scissors thing, or is it more of a tactics thing where you just use the tools you have available to the best of your ability?
It's not quite rock, paper, scissors, because, I mean, in a strategy game or a real-time tactical, you can sort of be assured that at any one time you're going to have lots of different units. But if you sort of have a ship in this game that's like, it can only damage shields, it will not damage hull or something like that, then you're like, well, what happens when I'm just doing a one-on-one battle? I'll just get down to that hull and wait around, I guess. So there is a certain amount of that. We're going to be playing more with ships that have like a definite advantage against one type of unit or one type of system.
We have a few kind of soft counters in the game. Roughly, for example, energy weapons do more damage to shields, missile weapons do more damage to hulls, so ships kind of can get a little bit of a bonus in that way. You can have a small rock, paper, scissors effect going on, but we're always trying to make sure that is kind of, if you know about that, then good, but you could still play without knowing that.
And it's surprising how much, like, really minor tweaks between different units have a really big effect on, I think, how the game turns out. Like, I was talking earlier about how the robot ships tend to be a little more, like, monocentric weapons, just like, it'll just have really big rail guns, not a huge variety of weapons, compared to the humans that kind of have like missiles and like 2 different sets of turrets or something. And it does lead to a pretty big difference both when you're playing them and when you're fighting them. When you're fighting the robots, you have to be a lot more careful about maneuvering and like staying outside of their arcs of fire, whereas with humans you're just like, just shoot them, just keep shooting them. They don't really have those arcs, just keep shooting them.
So you'll be able to control all these different factions. You'll be able to fly their ships and everything.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Now, is that just in the skirmish mode, or will there be different campaigns in the single player for them? How is that going to work?
There's going to be at least one a faction usable in the campaign, but I think my thoughts on this are, I think, the same as Chris's, that there's got to be more than that eventually. Like, how could you just play one? I don't know, because we've done a lot of discussion about how you would play as the other factions.
One thing we've been kind of working on, actually, I can say, if you ever played Dawn of War series?
I've toyed with it.
Okay. One of the iterations in it, Dark Crusade, had a kind of very interesting campaign system where you basically had regions that you fought over. And, you know, you conquered them. Regions had bonuses. You could minorly upgrade your army and things like that. So we're thinking of, I guess, something like that. Not too complicated.
Easily loan itself to just picking your faction first.
Oh, so something more of like a meta type campaign where you have a big map and you're fighting over territory and like...
I think, however, the campaign ends up working, Chris and I, like, from the start, want there to be a star map. I was just working on it today.
Oh, so wait, is it going to be story-based, or is it going to be more meta, like, dynamic-type, territorial control-type thing?
We've discussed both in detail how either one would work, and we've landed on kind of a blend between them.
Ooh, so are we talking, like, a mix of scripted missions and then maybe this random dynamic missions here and there as well?
Yeah, I think... It would be controlled mainly through through having essentially what functions like a quest in an RPG game, but just ones that have varied length. So like if you complete a mission for one, it might be that it's overarching and there's more that are coming up for it and that's like the main storyline. Other ones might just be a little like, you're getting a distress call, help, help.
Nice. So there's a lot of variety, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah, and like there's a whole set of different kind of conflicts and trouble zones that are happening all the time in the galaxy based on the map. So I think like there will be an element too of not really having a mission, but just sort of being on patrol and being like, I'm going to go to the old Solinar human border right now. And oh God, they're shooting at me. Start fighting back.
Nice. I was about to ask about that. Would there be like, and I was going to ask, are there missions where you pick at a sector and you're just patrolling it, or like. Like on Star Trek, like there were a lot of missions where there was no combat. You'd be ferrying an ambassador, you'd be exploring a planet, you know, stuff like that. Is there any plan for that kind of non-combative mission?
It's one of the parts I'm actually the most excited about because that's what would really be one of the big differences between a game where you're a fighter and a game where you're a capital ship. Like on Star Trek, a capital ship, it has sensors and crew that have all these ideas for how to solve different problems and
right.
Chris and I were talking about having like the radar mode that you switch to that shows you the map would be a really great way to show different parts of the map that you can interact with, like go up to something and, I don't know, a simple example is dock with a space station, but also other stuff like, you know, hidden secrets and parts of missions where you go and you don't necessarily fight something, but rather do something a little more akin to a puzzle-solving type deal.
Like, here's a nebula. There might be something in there. Go check it out. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Brian, I noticed that you play TIE Fighter.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, it's one of my favorite games ever. But
Yeah,
I watched some of your Let's Plays, and it's great.
Are you guys going to include a mission where you have to shoot down space bombs?
Oh, God damn
it. You hate those space bombs. Never. I heard you talking about that. No, I hate that.
All hate the shoot down the torpedo / bomb before they get to your carrier mission. Those are
It wouldn't even work because our ships, they all have those little point defense guns that shoot down missiles. So, if it tasked you with doing that, those would just shoot it down first.
So, I think the moment that I'm most proud of this show was our fourth episode where we actually had Chris Roberts on, and Brian actually got to, give him shit personally for those skipper missiles that were in.
You were, 10 3. Seconds away from giving out a Skype on a podcast I heard the other day.
Yeah, I was kidding. But I will give out yours.
Great, thanks.
Now, I have another question. Will there be, besides the factions, will there be, in your missions, will there be civilian traffic? Will there be pirates? Are you working toward making a more living universe, or is it going to be more of a static, you go here, you do this, you go here, you do this, that sort of thing?
Oh, we totally want civilians and traffic and such.
Did you guys try the second map on the beta version?
I've only played the one with the rocks on it.
Yeah, there's another one.
The other one's Deep Space,
If you go there, though, we thought Deep Space was a little too boring just in and of itself, so we threw a, destroyed super freighter with all these cargo containers and, little bits of cargo floating around that get in the way.
Oh, that's cool.
It's just a micro example.
Cargo for a bonus goal.
See, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's going to be how that whole scanning screen works.
Go to place, recover cargo.
Yeah.
Nice. Hide from the authorities like Firefly or something like that.
Yes. I love the sound of that. Now, can you board other ships and take them over?
It's not something we've got right now, but who knows?
So how,
I think,
how do
like,
you control...
sometimes...
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry. It's what I was going to say is there's some parts of science fiction in general that I have a deep place in my heart for, obviously, for them being things about science fiction. Who doesn't love science fiction? But there's also, I'm always trying to balance that with the things that I learn about how space combat is likely to happen in reality, if it ever does. And one of those things is, ships will be able to fight across distances similar to that between the Earth and the Moon. And I just think, how would they ever get close enough to dock?
That's true.
In a battle.
That's true.
But if there's docking, it's not that much different than boarding something. So might be something you can do once you've derelicted a ship.
I can definitely see that happening in a campaign setting, or
even
if it's just a specific thing that can only occur in certain missions, it could still be cool.
Well, that kind of leads to another question I have. Will you be able to target? I don't know if this goes beyond the complexity you're looking for, but will you be able to target a ship's engines and knock them out, or a ship's turrets and knock them? Ooh, good.
Yes, and you can already.
Yeah,
you can already.
So
if you look at your UI, you got a separate little health bar for your engines and your reactor core.
What?
Yeah.
So it's something that, again, we've kind of tried to make kind of transparent to the user. You don't need to use it, but you can if you want to. So we don't specifically show you that, shoot the engines to disable the engines. But hopefully you can figure that out,
Yeah, but you have to get pretty close to have any accuracy with that, right? Because it was while we were talking, I fired the game up again. Then I was playing. Well, what I did is because you guys were enlightening me about the battleships. So I put six battleships on each side and just let them duke it out. So that was interesting. But the thing that I was kind of struck with there, though, is now that I've got wingmen up here, can I control them in any way? Can I say you pick that target or go over there? Because it seemed like they were just kind of hanging out behind me, and then once we got close enough to engage, they just picked targets and focused on their own.
We've already got a simple version. Oh, sorry, were you were talking about directing your ships to pick specific targets?
Yeah, either giving them some direction, follow me or break an attack, or even to be able to switch perspective to another ship. I don't know if you want the commander to be able to teleport around to different units and take direct control. But if I could actually see from the point of view of a ship that I'm linked to, and then pick a target, and you know, like once I target a target, then he'll pursue that, and then I can jump back to my own ship, even if I'm not directly flying him around.
Right.
Well, if you go into the view selection mode with the middle mouse button, and you head over to that map, top-down map view, that will give you a list of the ships that you've got in your fleet, and at the moment you can give them some basic orders. So you can tell them to either attack a specific target, or you can tell them to defend you, and that'll just, you know, have them attack whatever's attacking you, whatever's most dangerous.
Okay.
So there's definitely some basic AI controls in there right now.
But when you're not using those, we've just got, like, part of the AI behaviors to go through the list of whatever possible targets there are and pick whichever one makes the most sense for it to fight. Like, firstly, just based on ship classes. So, like, maybe there's a ship that's good at destroying destroyers. It starts by targeting destroyers. And then there's like, a second level of behavior on top of that, which is like, oh, my God, someone's shooting me and is closer than my preferred target. I'll take on that guy now.
Hmm. Yeah, I read your recent post about the AI. It was kind of interesting. It looked like it took, like, branching paths or something, if I'm remembering right.
Yep. It basically, it doesn't, makes it, like, a pretty complex decision-making process based on lots of factors. So it'll be like, okay, you know, if I'm going to do this, then how do I do it? And then let's figure out the steps to execute it. I'm quite proud of it, but it's working out pretty well so far. And there's a lot of room to add more features into that AI. So stuff like different behaviors for ships. Say, you know, you want a ship that will specifically always want to come in really close and attack you. Okay, we can do that. The ship that hangs back and just blasts people with its main guns also can do that too. So I'm hoping to have a lot of cool stuff with the AI.
Yeah.
Now, I have another question. You said something earlier. I'm kind of all over the place. Don't mind me. But you said something earlier about, like, Firefly being able to lock on to something and hide. Is that something you could do in the game? Like, could you lock on to, like, an asteroid and shut down your systems and, like, hide from sensors or something like that? That sounds kind of awesome. So I was just wondering if that's a possibility.
Chris, right now you lose missile lock when something gets occluded by, like, an asteroid or something, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so there's that.
you can kind of hide, I guess. Not so much right now. We fiddled around with having it so that ships, like, would lose missile lock and lose, like, actual targeting lock, too, so that you couldn't target them and you couldn't hide them. But that actually became quite frustrating.
Mm.
It's like, all right, it just ducks behind that asteroid. And suddenly now I've lost it. It kind of made the actual gameplay suffer a bit.
Yeah, at some point you're playing Sub-Commander, you know, because it's a detection game then.
I think that's ultimately what makes Chris and I both be a little less into the sort of cloaking device idea. I was telling you guys before about how I get a little bit into being like, how would this work in reality? And there is one element of cloaking that's like, well, it just wouldn't. Like, ships will always be putting out tons of infrared radiation and signals and all kinds of stuff. You could just always see one. But the other is that it's like, yeah, it isn't a submarine game, really. And, like, if there's something that isn't really what's part of, like, having a capital ship battle in space, this is kind of like discussion that needs to go into whether or not it's going to be a beneficial, like, addition to the game. I think that the idea of hiding from someone, like, in a mission might be a little more what we'd end up doing. Is like, there might be some kind of mission where, rather than it being that you can just, like, cloak or something, it would be like, jump into the Oort cloud and, like, navigate around to do some mission without, like, leaving the, like, you know, without doing some kind of thing that will make you be detected, kind of like a stealth mission in an FPS or something, or just like plot a route like through their sensor nets or something like that.
Right. So that reminds me then, will there be like shuttlecraft and fighters in the game that you'll be able to give orders to in situations like that?
Yes.
Oh. There we go.
Okay, so there's two things that I'm particularly proud of about our game. One is our explosions, because I like explosions. I'm a big fan of explosions.
Who isn't really?
And the other one is the fact that we're going to try something which people don't do very often, which is actually try to do controllable fighters. And I'm really excited about that. It isn't in the beta yet, because it's rather complicated. But,
oh, wow.
I mean, like, originally, we were planning for that to be the next update. I think we wanted to focus on multiplayer first, but yeah, carriers, that's coming.
Oh yeah, I saw that there was a thing for them in the beta, but there weren't any. But I was curious about that. So wait, you'll be able to like do like a remote control thing where you zoom down into a fighter and you'll be able to control it remotely, that kind of thing.
No, it'll be more like, say, you'll be more acting as like the squadron control officer.
Oh.
Or yes, I guess. commander of the air group, so you'll be directing your fighters, directing them to attack, directing them to, say, intercept missiles. So you
it's going
to
be a whole
fighters.
New middle click screen.
it should be interesting. Yeah. I've got a lot of plans for fighters from like ships that are dedicated carriers or ships that might just have, say, a fighter wing that's hanging off the side that will go into battle if you need them. And, you know, interactions between the point defense guns and the fighters, of course. And
yeah, and one interesting one is, like, if it is something where, like, obviously right now it's you versus another capital ship. That's pretty easy, right? You lead the capital ship and you shoot and your shots hit it. But, like, how do you use those big capital ship guns to shoot down fighters? we've been talking a lot about that. And, yeah, so it's pretty sweet, actually. Little fighters going to be running around the battles sometime soon.
Oh, that is awesome. So you did mention multiplayer. What kind of options are going to be available? Is there going to be co-op? Will you be able to play the campaign multiplayer? Will there be the separate modes? What are we looking at for multiplayer?
I think, ideally, from our point of view, that all sounds good. It's something that we haven't put a tremendous amount of finalization into yet.
Sure.
We've been working on prototypes and things. So if it turns out that there is some technical limitation that prevents us from being able to carry out play the whole co-op campaign multiplayer, it might be that there are just separate co-op missions that are a little more not the whole star map, but just something that you and an ally are tasked to do. And there's obviously, I think, going to be allied missions in terms of, like, in a fleet battle, you and your friend might be on the same fleet fighting another one, that type of thing.
Yeah, we got a number of game, sort of just standard game types in mind. Mm-hmm. And you could really see that there could be something like Capture the Flag, even in space, your standard death match, something where you and a friend fight off an infinite wave of enemies and see how far you go, that kind of thing. So lots of plans for that.
But some games I've seen have a variation on like the assault game type, where there's just like two targets in the same system and both teams are tasked with destroying it. Or I guess it's almost like an assassination game type or something, which is pretty fun because then you're not having to shoot down the missiles that are headed towards it, but just like play as normal until suddenly something gets close enough to your target to start shooting it, and then you're like, everyone kill that right now.
Okay, that sounds pretty awesome. Yeah. I'm not even a multiplayer fan, and that sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah, Jim was telling me that the other day. He was saying that you never play multiplayer. I was like, we should have a LAN party and trick you into playing multiplayer with us.
No, I don't like other people. I just I'm not a fan.
But you get to kill them.
I guess that's true, but they also get to try and kill me. That's just that's just pressure I don't need.
It's a good point, and that's why co-op modes are good, or even just like comp stomps or something where you and a friend can actually be on the same team and not have to worry about being backstabbed.
Well,
you half-heartedly agree to that too, you're like, yeah.
The problem I have with multiplayer is time, really. Like, I have a hard time sitting down on my own and finding time to play a game, let alone coordinating with other people, So that's my big issue with multiplayer. Now, something massive and persistent like Star Citizen or EVE, I'll probably be different.
Right.
But, yeah, that's my issue with multiplayer. But this sounds like it'd be a good time with multiplayer because I love cap ships. So,
yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
What is going on? Jim, are you sending stuff? What is going on? Oh.
Wow.
Seriously? So you got three different colors of things, and one is holding the ship up. The box of the ship, not even the miniature, but the box of the ship. Oh my god, folks! Jim just showed a picture of the counter of the board game he was talking about earlier, and it's a multi-layered thing with different angles and different colors, and
it's like a bunch of wedges all sitting on top of each other to
angle
the ship in a certain way.
It's extremely clever.
That honestly is extremely clever. I would actually, I don't know if I'd ever want to actually play this, because this is why I prefer video games to board games, because I don't
think I would really enjoy? I was just going to say, is watching specifically while someone narrates.
Oh.
Like, narrates with a storyline.
Yeah, this is the game for, like, GM. Whenever people are like, yeah, Starfleet battles, that's for sissies. There's not enough, enough checkboxes on the ship counter sheet, So... We need something where we need like Asians to come help us with the math to play this game. Right?
This puts Battlefleet Gothic to shame. Yeah. Like, terribly to shame.
Oh my god. Yeah, this looks insane. So basically there's three counters and two of them are for height and one is for angle.
Well,
is that
there's
how
a
that's
pitch
working?
And a yaw. Right, so the ship is basically at like 30 degrees roll and 45 degrees pitch, and it's
that alters the firing angle of its
right
weapons.
and the blue shit there is like 10 hexes, and then the white ones are single. So you would think the elevation of it is like 23 hexes above the map board. So yeah, it's all head math, dude. It all.
And
you know what? Another context I would totally enjoy this game in is that my friends and I, whenever we play Settlers of Catan, I don't know how it went this way, but like lately, whenever we play it, it just becomes incredibly contentious, and we all walk away like angry at each other in this kind of cartoonish way. I bet this game would be that times 10. Like we would be tearing each other's throats.
I think Settlers of Catan needs like a nuclear option, right? So you're actually like, I'll trade you my sheep for your plutonium. And then you do have like a nuclear option where you can win by being the first person on the island to test a bomb.
It could be the Katana Rat.
Yeah.
That sounds like every game of Monopoly I ever played. You know, you just walk away angry and resentful at the end of like 5, 6, 8 hours of however the fuck long that game took.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. It's the time. Like, that's probably why it's changed lately, is because we've like gotten adept enough not to win quickly, but rather to like prolong a game when you know you're losing.
That's called being a contractor.
The longest road, did you? Nope. No,
it's like I'm a contractor. I can't solve the problem, but I can prolong the issue.
Exactly.
Oh god, this looks insane. So, all right, between all the factions and everything in this game, how many ships are we talking about?
Because we say 10 per faction plus variants.
Jesus.
At least, yeah. Yeah, this is about right.
I mean, that's a bit of an indication of the part of us that isn't, it's a little more, it's interested in things other than just gameplay mechanics. If we wanted it, if we just cared about that, there would probably be like 3 ships per faction. But there's going to be some that are just like, there's a ship right now on the human side, the frigate, called the Jericho class. I mean, the humans already have ships that have guns. Like, what else do you really need? This one's got kind of a weird system where it's like got a single charge up gun that's really powerful and it's also like really slow and armored, so you just have to play it a specific way. You have to sit back and play it a different way. I think it just comes from playing enough games where you do have exactly as many things as you need, whether they're like ships or units or whatever. And after you played enough, you sort of go like, I just want another one, even if it's not really that different. So it gives us a chance to give some insight into like the flavor of the different factions by being like, and then there's this other ship that does this thing, and this one's a little different. And so there's just tons.
Now, are you planning on making the game moddable so people can add their own ships and all that kind of stuff?
So I could chime in on that, I guess. Unity's not a great platform for modding.
Oh, really?
The only game that I've seen that's really done a great job of incorporating modding into it is Kerbal Space Program.
Yeah.
which is an excellent game, and I'm in awe of how they managed to do what they did. And sometimes I'll look at their mods and be like, "How did you do that? That would be difficult." But I guess long story short, no. But we're kind of hoping to have enough like dialogue with fans and enough various variants of ships that we can really make almost anything.
I think the trouble with Unity is always that unless you do a lot of changes, it's always like referencing its own files. Is that right, Chris? And so it's not quite like other games where you can just like pull up the 3D model file and overwrite it with a new one or like make a new texture. They're all kind of like compiled into these Unity specific files. So I think you can do it if you have Unity, right? And I guess if you have the original project files, but it makes it a bit difficult to go and be like, yeah, make a new ship for our game. All you have to do is like contact us and get a development build.
Oh wow. So do all the ships and other units, do they actually like compile right into the thing in a hard coded way, or I'm not.
Yeah, they build into the Unity assets files, so they're not like, it's not like you can just say pull up. I don't know. Me and Alex both started our like game development stuff modding Star Trek Armada. I don't know if you guys ever played that.
Oh yeah, but, of course. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, back then
you
back
are then a space game junkie.
Yeah, junkie. Goddamn
Brian,
right.
Brian now, has actually played Star Trek New Worlds. So you know,
I played that.
I saw that at London Drugs once.
Yeah, that's like everybody that ever played that game. Oh, I played that once. So
yeah, I played the demo maybe once or twice. Like, I'm done. Yeah, we couldn't figure out
what the hell was going on.
Am I aware, like, that nothing about that game existed in actual Star Trek? That it was all about, like, ground troops and Federation.
It was all about ground troops. And there were, like, there was a great bit. I don't think I did this, but I saw a video of it where you can call a ground strike. And, and like, the Enterprise would fly, or, like, a ship that looked like that, would, like, fly into low orbit and, like, drop proton torpedoes onto ground troops and then fly back out. I'm not even fucking making this up. And then you had like shuttles that were like speeders in Star Wars. They didn't even really fly. They just kind of hovered.
Yeah, I think orbital bombardment is a direct violation of the Prime Directive. I'm not sure.
Yeah, man.
But if you fly down the atmosphere, it's not orbital.
Oh, yeah.
So then it's okay.
It's just normal bombardment.
it's just a strafing run.
So
at that point, and you're
so
fine.
Since we were talking about the game assets, though, that's something I do want to bring up. The game models look absolutely gorgeous, and I like the way that the shadows play on them and all that. It's probably one of the best looking space games that has cap ships in it that I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's super nice. Thanks. Yeah, that Shadows Alex thing, by the way, is like, so we're developing in the free version of Unity right now. We're maybe we'll talk later about Chris and I's plans for you know, that place where you go to ask people for funding when you want something like Unity Pro. But anyway, in the free version, they didn't allow you to use shadows until like the last version that came out a couple weeks ago, and it was like, by the way, now you can use shadows on one light, and we were like, this finally. So everything got a lot more beautiful overnight.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. Alex is a great modeler. I am honored to have him as a coworker. He does a lot of good work, and he puts up with me when I like and say like, okay, actually, no, I need that to be slightly different. Make me another version, but with a hole here. So yeah, thank you.
So what do you guys do? You said you worked on this part time. What are your daytime gigs?
I'm actually just enjoying some time away from work on the summer right now. I was working at a tutoring company called Brain Boost, and I was tutoring like 3D animation and things there.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm just looking for some new full time work now. Which is great. It means I have tons of time to build things for the game.
It's true.
Yeah. I just finished my master's in something completely unrelated to programming and game design, so looking for a job in that now.
It was tangentially related to programming and game design, wasn't it?
programming was involved, I suppose. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So how far along
that rent check comes along?
how far along is the game, would you say?
That's a good question. We've split up the major updates that the game's going to get into three different ones. Actually, not updates, like the modules that the final game will be made of. The first is skirmish mode, the second is multiplayer mode, and the last one is single player mode. So in that respect, you could say that it's a third of the way done. I mean, each of those updates will also have things like new factions. Like, there's only the two in the beta right now.
But you get all the gameplay stabilized and hammered out, and then you can put the scripted campaign once everything's set.
Exactly. It's the exact same way for multiplayer, that it's a little bit easier from our point of view to try to get multiplayer working once we have all of the systems laid out, which is kind of what we're developing the skirmish mode for right now.
Okay.
So what's the maximum number of players that you think you're going to target for in multiplayer?
How many players per battle?
Right now, the game runs relatively well in terms of like the graphics frame rate with the full roster of ships. I guess the limit is the netcode, and I've never really played around with Unity's netcode yet. I hear it's not great.
Mm.
I would hesitate to say anything more than 16 players.
Okay. And
it might be a situation where, like, if you're lining with some friends or whatever, you could pile some more on because LAN's intrinsically like lower latency than over the internet. But I mean, hopefully the actual system itself, like the game, how many ships can be on screen at once, won't be a huge limiting factor in that. Like Chris was saying, it's gotten a lot more optimized now. So I don't know. I don't get any lag when I've got like 16 battleships fighting each other.
Yeah, well, it's the thing of like once you get 16 players, then the problem is the logistics of how do we get 16 people into a game. So, are you looking at like having a server browser, or does this have to be like 16 people that know each other and want to trade IP addresses, or, you know?
I think for the first version, it's probably going to be trading IP addresses. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, I think that in terms of development time, that's the simplest way to go. And, you know, once things, if there's demand for that kind of thing, if enough people are playing the game, that we'd say, like, okay, server browser, then we can probably do something like that. But just direct connections.
Okay. Yeah, one thing to be wary of more full-time in that is back whenever my wife and I would have computers here in the house, and then we would connect to friends, and everything seems to be like online matchmaking stuff now, where there'll be a lobby out, as some third party.
Yeah.
So a lot of that has been resolved. But back in the day, whenever we used to like play in MechWarrior 4, whenever you'd have to actually key in IP addresses and stuff, a problem that we would run into a lot is if my wife and I were playing against my friend's wife and he, and the two of us are behind one LAN and they're behind another one, and then we've got the WAN between us, then the routers would get freaked out about which ports we were coming across. So that's just a thing to watch out for, just in your testing of the multicode, you might want to test that scenario specifically. Is like
ports, the old enemy.
Yeah, because we ended up using some kind of port.
I remember that too.
We'd force stuff onto different ports, like locally, and then there was a workaround, but it was ugly.
Nonsense at that point, because then you're spending 2 hours trying to set up your network connection before you can start playing the game with someone.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I'm hoping we'll be able to make it a little easier than that.
Did I just hear you typing that into one of our Google Docs, Chris?
No.
There it is again.
That was probably me. I have a very loud keyboard.
Ah.
It's an old IBM Model M.
No, that means nothing to me.
It's one of the original IBM clicky keyboards.
Oh, yeh.
Clicky kind. I love those.
Oh, I have three of them.
Do you guys read Coding Horror at all? It's Jeff Atwood's blog. He's Wumpus on Quarter to Three. Brian, you might know him there.
Oh yeah. I know. Yeah.
So Wumpus, his blog, he doesn't blog as much as he used to, but he used to blog like a monster, right? But Jeff or Joel Spolsky put together Stack Overflow, Server Fault, all those the Stack Exchange system of websites, and he's working on this new forum thing now. But since you bring up keyboards, he is a guy with a really bad keyboard fetish, and he went to this place. I forget what the name of the company is, but they make custom keyboards, and he designed out this keyboard. And if you go to codekeyboards.com, I think it is, but this is this keyboard that this guy that we know designed, and it's also one of those super clicky, nice keyboards, and it's I don't want to just take the last of the show to pimp his stuff, but
it's $150.
It's beautiful,
isn't it? And the media,
it's gorgeous.
Media control keys, and you can also order it without the numeric keypad if you think that's just extraneous.
Why would I want that? No,
well, some people hate
that
thing.
I have to have it.
No, it takes up real estate.
How do you play like? How do you play like strategy games without it, though?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, what I think is really neat is he managed to get the media control keys on there, but they're on that page up, page down, home insert, delete cluster. You hold like a function key, and then those are the media control keys. And all those are like laser cut into the thing, and they used like some custom font that he picked out and everything. So that's like totally the work of like one of us was like, I hate all the keyboards on the market. I'm going to make my own. And that's what he did.
Now, this works with a Mac. I would love to get one to work. I would love to get one of these to work with my MacBook at work, but $150. Oh, my God.
Well, you just have to love yourself $150 worth. That's all.
I do, but I need to upgrade my whole system before. I need to do an upgrade, man, before I upgrade
a keyboard. Yeah, but it's got the loud-ass Cherry micro switches in it that can drive your coworkers insane. But it sounds like productivity, even when you're IMing. You could be over there goofing off and sounding that's like you're coding point. Like mad.
It just says code at the bottom.
it's a beautiful device, but no.
Well, you've got your Model S. I just thought I'd bring that up because you're a fan of those loud, bangy keyboards, just like I am. So
oh, absolutely, I am. I mean,
since it's Wumpus, I mean, who we've known for umpteen years, but.
Yeah, see,
it's really delightful, by the way.
Oh no, I love typing on this thing. It's a joy.
What puts me in mind of back in my freshman year at high school. I won't admit what year that was, but the IBM 8086s were brand new, right? And we got them.
Right.
This was like 1984, right? And but we, like all the other schools in the area got Apple IIe's, which were cool in their own way, but we got IBM's because they wanted us to be like ready for the business world, right? And they all had those like those, well, they had like buckling spring, like super loud keyboards in there. You could hear people typing down the hall. So that's what kind of put me on the path of it, you know, just hearing that noise from a keyboard like puts me back into my younger days.
No, I know lots of people who stick to it. They call them the clackety keyboards.
Yeah.
The old IBM ones that you can hear them.
No, they're
tactile about them.
Oh, no, they're wonderful to type on. Absolutely. I wouldn't replace them for the world.
Yeah, $150.
Is that why you have three, or like just in case?
No, I had, well, I was using, I had a PC at work for a while, so I was using one over there. Mm-hmm. And then they switched me to a Mac, and these are 101 keyboards. They're missing those extra keys that you need if you have a Mac.
Right.
It's
frustrating.
So yeah, there was nothing I could do. There was nothing in the world I could do to like replace that missing like option key or whatever the fuck it is. So
there's no like hotkey remapping.
Yeah, well, it's missing the Windows key or the logo key, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's missing the Windows key, which on a Mac I think is the command key.
Yeah. The propeller.
Oh, without a Windows key, what am I going to accidentally press when I want to paste something?
You know, I'll never understand why it is that Apple, they used to have an Apple on the key, and everybody called it the Apple key. And then they took it off, and they replaced it with this, like, clover leaf propeller thing. And it's the command key now.
It's like a number sign made of
curves. Yes, exactly that. And it used to be the Apple key, but apparently they were embarrassed of their own corporate logo or something. I don't understand. But, yeah.
It's some weird ampersandy thing.
Yeah,
maybe it wasn't intuitive enough.
Or somebody got them as a patent troll. They patented, like, putting a fruit on a key. A non-specific fruit-like icon.
Maybe that's when it all started. And from that point, they were like, now we will sue anyone who tries to take our shit.
Well, there actually was a thing with FaceTime. Some patent troll got them. I heard about this just the other day. And it only came to light because of the litigation that's been going on. They were talking about this sort of in celebration of New Zealand saying, nope, we're done with software patents. That doesn't exist anymore. We're not going to honor them. We're not going to let you have any kind of lawsuits about them. And it's like, thank God. Because what happens is people aren't really defending their own work with it. It's like somebody will come up with an idea and then just lurk until somebody uses it and then come out and sue the bejesus out of them, right? So you don't have to declare that you patented it. You can let them build up a business that surrounds it and then jump out the closet and be like, boo, here I am, pay me. So what happened?
It's like a business strategy. That's terrible.
Exactly. There's places that are litigation houses, and that's all they do. So what they did was this guy had patented basically using a third party to negotiate a direct connection between two users to have a video chat, right? And that's how FaceTime used to work, is I would go, you know, to call Brian on, you know, my iPhone to his iPhone, and then it would handshake through Apple, right? And then it would direct connect us.
Right.
And now you can't do that because some patent troll jumped up and said, boo. So now all of this stuff has to actually pass through a middleman server, which degraded the performance of the service and made it a pain in the ass. But it's just to skirt around the letter of that patent. This is stupid.
Chris, what if they've done that for capital ships? That's not patented, is it? By like whoever made IWAR?
Well, let me tell you, I've been filling out the patent information ever since I played your demo. And
uh-oh.
Damn it.
Damn.
Well, on that note, let's get the hell out of here. This is probably a good time to wrap things up, I think. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about your game.
Well, thanks so much for having us on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's great.
It's very exciting. I mean, again, don't see a lot of cap ship sims, so, you know. I apologize. I found out about your demo in, like, March, and then I didn't try it till, like, August. I feel bad, but God, there's so much to play. It's so weird.
I'm busy too. I haven't played FTL yet, even though everyone around me has, and they're all telling me about it.
You know what?
And, If you get attached
to your little computer friends, little AI friends, don't play FTL. You will end up in a ball in the corner just crying.
It is sort of a meat grinder in space.
I would. That's exactly how I would play
it's, it. It's a mean, mean game that doesn't care about how you feel, and it will make you weep.
Yeah, it was a terrible game made by bad people.
Yeah, they're bad people who should feel bad because, like, oh my God, there's so many ways to die in that game. So many ways, and I have done most of them, and it's just crushing every time because they have names. Your crew have names. Even if you don't name them, they still have names. It's like, oh God, not Finglefang, not Finglefang. No,
he was so young, so talented.
We hardly knew ye, Finglefang.
Gosh, now wouldn't that be crazy if they could incorporate that sort of like order your crewmen to run around inside your ship into their game, where it's like, oh no, the engines are at 45%, and then you have to send like Henson down to the engine room to.
We've got we've already got the back end in place for having different officers that you choose to sit at different stations. Cool. and promote them to a certain point. You want to like make them captain of another ship. You can do that.
Oh, kind
of
neat.
So there's people to get attached to, and you can let them die if you want.
Oh. So you know what would be actually kind of cool is like the Star Trek films in both of them now have kind of driven this home. Like you're taking damage in combat, and like a bunch of people get like sucked out of the hull and thrown out into space as popsicles. Yeah. Right? So that would be kind of an interesting. I've never seen a space sim actually model like a bunch of people like
crew number
like little meat popsicles going out the side of the ship.
I've definitely heard that comment before that like, oh, when your ship gets hit, can little people fly out? I always thought it would be like I was like, well, I guess, but that's actually not a bad idea. That'll like work it into the almost like another health bar, like your crew.
Yeah,
crew.
It's, like terrible if someone else blows up a neutron bomb outside of your fleet, and then you're like, no, it's killing all the crew.
Oh God!
Hit the radiation suit button.
Okay, let's not do that. Let's not have little people fly out of that sounds
awful.
Yeah,
if you fly by they
we could name them. They could be like in the middle of dinner. They could
be oh, little flies.
No. They could have pets.
If your camera gets close enough to the floating body, it'll tell you some little details about their life.
I forget what game was it? Maybe it was like Eve Online or something where you could actually target corpses in space. I think it was Eve. Yeah, like after you killed somebody, they would leave like a spinning corpse out in space, and you could actually like tractor beam their corpse. But
oh dear.
Yeah, let's not do that, guys. Please, let's not do that.
Yeah, I think we'll leave that on the.
Wait,
maybe
we're saying you
list.
Don't want that now? Oh, okay.
I didn't want that to begin with. No FTL like personal. No, keep it all abstract. Keep it all abstract. That's how I. I mean, that's one of the reasons I love Free Space 2 so much is because it's Alpha 2 and it's Beta 1 and, you know, there are no names. Like, I'm not going to care if Alpha 3, oh, darn, Alpha 3. Oh, no. But, like, in fucking Wing Commander, when you lost Angel, you're like, oh, God.
Holy crap, spoilers.
No, that.
Oh, my gosh.
20-year-old game, dude. Get over it. Anyway. I might be wrong. It's been so long since I played it, I might be wrong.
Shit. Who's the one that died in the Wing Commander movie? I want to reference that to aggravate you. Rosie. Her name was Rosie.
What?
Yeah, in the Wing Commander movie, there's a chick named Rosie that dies.
Really? How does she?
Yeah, there's this really weird scene where she, like, something happens when she's landing her fighter plane.
Oh, yeah, she crashes and then they, like,
it's just sitting on the yeah. Deck. They bulldoze her off, and then her fighter plane falls as though it was on an
accident. Right, that. Oh God! No, the gravity or something like gravity.
What
is
was the gravity
wrong.
In the situation? Was it? Pretty extreme.
Jesus, Jim.
I know, right? hey, Chris said that he didn't see the costumes even until the day before shooting. Right, so you know, I give.
Really?
Oh yeah, there was. Go back yeah, and listen to that one because I asked him about the movie. I also do a bad movie podcast, and I was just like, I've been holding off, kind of. Doing this movie on my other show, but you know, maybe it's time, but I got time with the director right now, so let me just crack open the lid on that and see what happens. man, he gave us like an hour of dirt.
He was amazing, honest about it. It was incredible.
Well, like, I mean, what's going to happen now? Are they going to be like, no, you might ruin first weekend sales?
Oh, my God. Blu-ray sales took a dip because Chris Roberts.
Oh, died. Man. Is Wing Commander on Blu-ray? That, I must know.
All those sales of that Wing Commander.
Wing Commander is on Blu-ray. I refuse to buy it. I will not. I love Blu-ray. I love Blu-ray. I will not buy the Wing Commander movie. Though, I don't know if you saw, I did buy 4 Wing Commander books the other day. I'm looking forward to reading those.
That's excellent.
Tie-in novels. Yeah,
I saw where you like came out of the bookstore with like a giant box of books. You were cuddling like a kitten.
It was a paper bag full of 13 books that I got for $19. It was the Man Kazin books. It was the Man Kazin Wars. It was 2 Honor Arrington books, and then there was 4 Wing Commander.
Yeah, slight spoiler, but I remember the very first Man Kazinti. Story that I read was actually like we'd met them and they shot at us, but we were a science ship, so we didn't really have any guns, right? So they turned the ship toward them and just fired the engines at full blast and cooked them, you know, used the engines like a wave motion cannon. So,
oh wow,
that's awesome. Wait.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
Yeah, because it was just like, you know, we'll just fire a blast of radiation at them.
Yeah, all right, I remember. There's a website called Atomic Rockets. Talked about it in a making of video that we made about some spaceship I built. And it's great because it talks all about like really cool exotic weapons and things that are grounded in physics. They talk about that. I just remember they're talking about like having nuclear propelled spacecraft, and they're like, and by the way, it's also its propulsion system is like more powerful than any weapon system you could ever mount to it.
Yeah.
Just use that.
You have to be really careful about getting in your buddy's engine wake. So, that's the thing too about spaceships like that. You know, if you take it into a realistic territory, then you have to look at like what sort of radiation is out there and how are we shielded against it, right? Because, you know, it's like you might be okay till you get too close to the sun, and you know, and then bad things start to happen. And about like the emissions, the ships, and that, because I had a long conversation with a guy that was a sci-fi writer about this some years ago, about, you know, what is the detection profile of a ship? Like, you're going to see them either visually, but, you know, that's light, so you're looking for a needle in a haystack, you know, or you have engine emissions against the background of space, but also at distance, you know, that's going to be trouble. But we kind of arrived at like, for stealth, you would probably want to come from the sun side because you have this giant ball of nuclear energy, and you're going to not really register on the surface of that if you're approaching your target from there. So, like, if you wanted to make it a detection game, you know, it's like sub-war in space kind of thing. But then
that would be really interesting, actually, throwing the – oh, I think, actually, on all of our maps, the sun is distant enough that it wouldn't quite have that effect. But,
yeah.
But for sure, I guess, like, in space in general, if you were up close and personal with the sun, if you were heading away from it at all, it'd be enough glare to block you out.
Right, but it's like...
We got right up close, and then everyone's like, what the hell? It just came out of the eclipse.
Well, because all sci-fi, you know, it's like Star Trek, right? It's just like we have a magic television, and it will show us anything that we want to see. So it's like, oh, there's Klingons, and you get a close-up view, you know? But it's actually like, what are you actually detecting out there? Like, you know, are you sending out like some sort of a signal and getting a bounce back like sonar, or are all of your sensors passive? Because otherwise you could just like shut down all of your emissions as much as possible and then listen, you know? And I don't know if anybody has ever like had a mission where you go out and you drop like sensor boys out along a picket line, like, well, if the enemy,
like decoys. Do you mean like decoys?
Not so much like decoys, although decoys would be interesting too, right? Because you'd have like some sort of stellar noisemaker. You just like fire this missile out, and it gets like so many thousands of kilometers away, and then turns on like a jazz band, right? And you know the enemy says, "Oh, their fleet's over there." But yeah, it's I was talking about like as far as actually detecting enemy ships that come in, you know, like the way that you're faster than light works, is it ships have to enter the system through at a particular point, like a jump point, and you know that they're going to come from there?
Yeah, a little bit. There's basically any point that's gravitationally neutral. So like a Lagrange point between two planets, or maybe a fancier way of making a spot gravitationally neutral. And Chris's faction has a bit of a different, fancier FTL drive.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe less fancy. But that would mean that there's a sort of like a preset set of places where you want to, where you could warp into a system.
Okay, so basically it's like you could warp in at one of these preset points, and then there would be maybe be some points that are maybe riskier to warp in, right? Because you might screw it up and be destroyed. So, but if you don't want to gamble, then you come in the preset points, but that means the enemy has all their sensors trained at that spot waiting for your warp signature.
Yeah, exactly.
So
maybe they build a big ass space station with all its guns pointing right at that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was the thing that bothered me. Like in the movie Pacific Rim, it's like, you know that all the kaiju come from this hole in the ground, right? So why don't you just put like a big meat cleaver there that just swings as soon as they poke their head out? It's like chop, you know?
Or just like a series of lasers.
Yeah, or hell, just strap a nuke to it, right? Like as soon as one comes out,
exactly.
There's movement in the breach. Boom. Okay.
Boom. Problem solved.
I think
be a lot much less cooler movie.
Well, that's true.
If you're,
I think it's interesting because part of the idea there was to create a system where like there was a bit of a limitation to where people can come from and where people can leave from. But I think like just militarily, there's all kinds of ways I can think of for how to counter that. Like I think there's one mission in the demo where in the write up it says that it's the mission where you have your fleet of ships all waiting at a starbase that you're protecting, and as the waves come at you, more and more of them like finish repairing and come and help you. And the reason why they were all not repaired when the battle started was because they were like hanging out by the Lagrange point defending it, like you say, and the enemies, instead of jumping their ships in right away, just like jumped in a bunch of EMP bombs. They were like, oh shit, we shouldn't have put our ships so close to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a tactical consideration, right? Like, what if you had suicide ships that were really just big EMP bombs? Yeah, that's, you know, because that brings into, like, the whole sensor disruption thing, right? So you could have ships that, and that would be maybe a role for the fighters, would be to jump in with some sort of a capital ship that launches a bunch of fighters, and then the fighters go out there and take care of the sensor arrays or whatever, because they're small enough to not be seen. Because otherwise, it's like, how do you justify, I could have a giant capital ship that I can just, like, launch 1,000 missiles off of. Why would I put a bunch of individual pilots in starfighters and send them out, and they can each, like, launch one torpedo? And there's got to be a reason,
I think,
like, that they can get in undetected or, you know, hit that exhaust port that's in the trench.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I think, like, I've thought about that too, because really there is that good argument that's kind of a cost-benefit analysis about space fighters, and it can seem kind of dire at times, even though obviously like we're not making a game about space fighters. I think since we're planning to use them, I've put a bit of thought into justifying it. I think it's like there's also a part of it that's a bit like, you know, lots of people say that drone warfare is sort of like the way of the future. There's always going to have to be some kind of vehicle that has people on it, because like you can't occupy a place without moving an army around. In the same way, like, I guess, I think even in some kind of, like, space battle scenario, fighters will probably always serve a purpose. At the very least, it's like, we've got people on the ground, we need, like, fighters to go in and support them. Mm-hmm. And then, like, so they're enough as a reason for a carrier, and then if it's a carrier, like, if that part of combat exists, there's probably a counter to it, maybe one that exists in space, and then maybe it leads to a whole kind of warfare just between fighters in space.
Well, because most people, you have to make a weapon platform that can destroy itself, right? But then you run into an enemy that maybe has something that you're not capable of engaging, because if you're playing like interstellar rock, paper, scissors, right? So it's like, I have scissors and I make scissors that can destroy other scissors. And then we run into these other people that are like space bugs or something, and they fly in rocks.
Shit, where did they get rocks from?
So
I thought only we knew about rocks.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, different races could solve problems completely different ways. So, like, we might have shields because we're used to dealing with, you know, people shooting lasers and missiles. And then they would have, you know, some other kind of weapon that we can't even conceive of, you know, but it's normal to them. But maybe they just, like, disrupt the fabric of space or something with a, you know. But, yeah, and it's like, well, how the hell do you counter that? but it's a thing in a space game like this where you generally, to have an even playing field, everybody kind of has to be shooting the same things at each other.
I mean, to an extent, it's again, one of those things where we've just been stepping a little bit outside of the kind of balancing that you'd expect. Like, yeah, they have guns, and then they have guns in different places. But, like, you guys probably know Urquan Masters, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and, like, it's really interesting because in that game, they totally do that. It's like every sci-fi concept you can imagine. Like, this ship has a nuclear drive, and if you crash into its wake, you take damage. And this one has weird, like, it steals your crew, and that's how it damages you and things like that. And it's so creative, but they all, like, it does lead to some situations where some things just die against other things, but it ultimately has this kind of harmony that somehow works out. And it might be that if there was a ship that just goes through shields or something with its weapons, it might seem like the biggest advantage unless there's something else that you have that, like, if we're thinking of this, like, really weird exotic means of combat between some two factions, like, maybe there's some alien that's, like, much more susceptible to electromagnetic radiation than you are. And so, like, just using your countermeasures hurts them in addition to your weapons or something.
That would be pretty terrible on your robot race. Like, if you just hit them with EMPs and it actually kills them, not just disrupts their systems.
I think that's, like, I think they see that as the equivalent of chemical weapons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
They hate it.
I can't see that. Okay, well, guys, I hate to do this. I'm actually falling asleep as we talk.
We gotta
cut this short. But, guys, that was a fun discussion.
Yeah, totally.
I think this is the third time I've tried to wrap this up.
let's do it now.
But we keep talking. Not that's a bad thing. But, yeah, I gotta go. So, thank you so much for coming on. It was a lot of fun. And we can't wait to see how this game evolves, because I know I've been digging the demo and the beta that you sent. And more work obviously needs to be done, but I'm really liking what I'm hearing in the direction that the game is going to be going. So that's very exciting.
I'm really looking forward to getting Brian into multiplayer. So
we'll let you guys know.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Yep. Bye.
Night.
Let's have some music in here, Boiler. Sure thing.
A bit of sunshine down.